Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, your source for snarky reality TV recaps from all the networks across the board. No one is off limits as I dissect even the tiniest details of our favorite train wrecks. Be sure to follow up between episodes on Twitter and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. Snark with me and fellow listeners on Facebook in the Reality TV Podcast Orchard of Snark group. And for nitty-gritty, unfiltered me, check out bonus episodes at patreon.com/realitvpod. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Are you there, Reality TV podcast listeners? It's me, Jody. I feel like I'm Dorothy, who just got back to Kansas after way too many days off between episodes. I knew Sister Wives and Seeking Sister Wife were just boring repeats on Sunday because of the Super Bowl, but why in the world MTV pulled a fast one on us and chose to do some lame Teen Mom 2 rehash on Monday night? I don't know. It made no sense to me at all. I'm thinking maybe they're just dangling that Farrah firing in front of us to see how desperate we are to keep watching. And on that topic, did you know the ever keen and quick on the Married at First Sight news at MAFS fan, Married at First Sight fan on Twitter, saw that Lifetime is not airing a new episode of Married at First Sight next week? What the hell? Lifetime, come on, we need you. Okay, all right, well, let's just get to it because, truth be told, the water department is coming to update all the water valves or meters or something in my city neighborhood this afternoon. So they're going to be shutting the water off. I'll have some guy in here. So I'm going to need to squeeze in a shower because, yay, I already went to the gym this morning. Pat on my back. But now I risk being murdered because I'll be home alone with the water meter man. I don't know. Maybe I should just do... Anyway, I'm going to be on Facebook Live later this afternoon, 12:45-ish Central Standard Time. Okay, maybe I'll just try to be there or at least send you guys a proof of life. So if you don't hear from me around that time, send help, call the Illinois State Police to come check on me. Okay, so let's start right off the bat with a little Molly and John. We're back from the honeymoons and the couples are now getting ready to move in with one another. I can only imagine how the city of Boston's plumbing and sewage system took a major spike in usage when these six people got back because, as I've mentioned before, they've probably not taken a shit since before their wedding days. I know if I were any one of them, I would have just Amazon primed some prunes and a really good, strong probiotic to my apartment ahead of time. I mean, I know myself well enough that I would rather send myself into severe constipation than poop anywhere near a new boyfriend or a stranger husband for a week on your honeymoon. No, not happening. And I think Molly might have had some bad gas or a colon like me because she looked awfully anxious to get in her car and head to her own apartment when they landed in Boston. And while Molly was excited to sit on her own porcelain, John was excited to see, oh, you know it, Dawn. Oh, God. As John tells us about Molly coming over the next morning, we kind of get a look at his place before Molly does, and we see the enormous cat tower behind him. I mean, it just keeps getting worse. God bless that producer who told him to stand there. That was no mistake. I mean, he could have had the Boston skyline in the background, but no, he's in front of the fucking cat tower. And John almost seemed proud to show it off, like, my cat has a penthouse, like he's Dawn's sugar daddy. You know he's got like a preferred PetSmart card, and he's thinking, oh, it's like the black card of preferred customer. he's going to score some points with Molly. Well, Molly finally arrives, and she looks adorable as always. How she's able to keep her tank top so damn white. I mean, it really is remarkable. I don't know. I mean, am I doing something wrong? I'm a frequent bleacher with my whites. Not every time, because I know that'll actually make them yellow. But damn it, it is hard to keep those things white. All right. Well, as John shows Molly around, I just become increasingly disappointed with his place. It's just very bland, boring. I don't want to say sterile because it doesn't look that clean to me, but it's just very college apartment. He's got his snowboards hanging on the wall, you know, in case someone drops by and they can see that, oh yeah, he's the type that likes to hit the slopes. I don't know, it just reads very douchey and try hard to me. Now Molly goes into the closet to see if she'd have enough space in there, because remember, she said that she would consider his place, but she would have to see it first. So she opens it up, and there is no more than, what, five or six things hanging in there? What was that? So like anyone, she's like, you have no clothes. And he's like, oh, yeah, I do. Those are just my suits. All my other clothes are in my drawers. What? Okay, so you mean to tell me he has no, like, slacks that he's got to hang up, or no button-up shirts or dress shirts? Nothing else has to be hung. I don't know. Maybe we're the weird ones in this house, but I mean, my husband hangs most of his stuff, and then he just has like a couple drawers for his folded stuff. I don't know, but you know, my theory has always been with John that, you know, since he's jumped job to job to job, he really, I don't know, you know what I mean? He probably hasn't ever had to invest in that many work clothes. Like, he's only there for a couple months, just rotates a couple outfits in and out. Well, like I said, I was very underwhelmed by his place. But Molly, she was actually very pleased. Color me shocked. She said it wasn't little boyish and it looked like a grown-up's apartment. I firmly disagree. Did she see the massive, gross, lazy boy in the middle of the room with that fucking airbrushed wolf painting behind it? That thing looked like it would have been in Stephen Avery's trailer before he was hauled away by that crooked Manitowoc County Police Department. Well, even though she would have loved to howl at the moon with the wolf portrait and Dawn, she's going to take a hard pass because what it comes down to is she needs assigned parking. Now, it's John's turn to see Molly's apartment. He thinks her place is as, quote, bare as his, in that they have a lot of similarities in how they do life. I mean, anyone have guesses what he means by that? You both have couches and beds. You both brush your teeth. I mean, what could he have possibly seen that would lead him to believe that they're similar? They love saying how they're so similar. They're basically the same people. But I strongly believe that they are just, I don't know, projecting. Is that the right word? They're just fingers crossed hopefulness onto one another. I don't know. I'm not buying it. Well, John sees Molly's closet and instantly, I don't know why I took offense to it, but he's like, oh my God, that's a lot of crap. I saw lots of clothes. I didn't see crap. Sam's apartment, remember Samantha a few seasons ago, Samantha and Neil, that chick had a lot of crap. Molly's is just clothes and shoes. And she does have a lot of it. But you know what? If I were blessed with Molly's physique, I'd be rocking all that clothes too. So more power to her. Alas, even though Molly loves her place, she has a roommate. So they're going to need to find a new place and it must have assigned parking. I mean, I'm kind of making fun of her, but I'm with her on this one. I cannot parallel park. My driver's ed teacher just recommended that I never live in the city after a semester's worth of trying. And you know what? I've made it 20 years since then. I just circle the block, I park further away, incorporate some cardio sometimes, but you know what? I do everyone the favor. I know my limitations. You know what? Nothing to see here. I'm moving on. The space is yours. You're welcome. Now that a decision is made to find a new apartment, they have to talk finances. John is forced to tell us again how he quit his job to find love. Yeah, I know he said that this company didn't want him to do it because it wouldn't look good for them. I totally get it for that company. But think about it. If you were killing it at some new job, because remember, he can't keep a job, he just jumps from one to another, would you be leaving that job for a TV show for love? No. It's surely because he wasn't meeting his goals or quota or something, and he was probably on his way out anyway. Now, Molly's saying, you know what, she's not too worried about him not having a job, but she just wants to stick to their budget, $700 each for rent and utilities. And that is because she isn't willing to skimp on her hair and her nails. Now, how do I feel about this one? I actually totally get it. I get the hair thing. It's damn near impossible to feel good about yourself as a woman when you think your hair looks like shit. The nail thing, I personally, I'm not a big nail person. It's just not my thing. But you know what? If she can afford to do it, she's making her own money, do whatever the hell you want. Now, I think it's so shady how producers make each couple say how much they make a year allowed. I just think that's, I don't know, maybe like voting. It's just a private thing that doesn't need to be shared with the continental U.S. But of course, you know, I'm not going to be plugging my damn ears. I'm listening to every syllable coming out of their mouth. We find out Molly makes 50 to 55K a year and John, well, I was making 70, so yeah. Well, you were making 70. Right now, buddy, you're making zero, zilch, nada. Okay, yeah, he's getting money from the show, but he's not getting that check cut out to him in whole, you know, in full. And as I shared on Patreon, they aren't even making that much at all, like a fraction of what they're making. I know I certainly would not do the show for that little. Now, I cannot leave this couple in this scene without mentioning the pizza and beer. To be honest, it's not that often I can watch how a skinny chick eats, but did she really just take one bite and leave the rest? I don't know if it bothers me more that she has the willpower to just take a little nibble, or if it bothers me and stings me to my core that she can pile drive that Hawaiian down her throat and still say, so slim. Ding dong, house hunters time. Should they choose house number one with charming brick walls, city living, but no assigned parking for her? Or house number two with all the amenities they could need and assigned parking across the street? I mean, duh, no brainer. It's the second one. John tells us that he's even going to give Dawn to a friend so that Molly doesn't have asthma attacks every night, but really, he's hoping for a blowy in return. He didn't say it exactly like that, but we all know what he's saying between the lines. He's insinuating it. He's getting antsy about this lack of affection, and without Dawn to cuddle at night, I think someone's going to get a little cranky. All right, moving on to Jackie and Ryan. I don't know if my ears are starting to play tricks on me, or is Ryan starting to sound like Tony on Sister Wives? He has a slight bubble in his throat. It's not as severe as Amber's mom on Teen Mom, but it's there. Like, I just want to take a pin and poke the air bubble in his trachea. And he says, waiting for my wife Jackie to come home. It's very exciting to have a wife. Yeah, we've heard you, Ryan, and we've seen you do the splits and your used condom. We got the message loud and clear. You're excited. Now, the one and only Mrs. Buckley arrives to Ryan's place. Although he's got two roommates, Jackie actually loves the apartment. It's clean, organized. She even likes the color scheme. Not sure what that was because I just saw beige and some plaid sheets that looked like something his mom probably bought for him. However, because of those two roommates of his, they can't live there. So, on to her place to check it out. I liked Jackie's place. It was old and historic looking. I love those kind of houses. Definitely need some renovation and updating, but it's cute. The teddy bear on the bed and her bedroom decor was a little juvenile for my liking, but if this is a rental house, I get it. You just got to work with what you've got. Both of their places had a more homey feel than Molly and John's. It just felt more matured and settled. I liked it. However much they both like one another's places, they have made this decision that they're going to play house hunters too. They want a fresh start together. So they're looking for something long term. Wherever they go, they're thinking they're going to stay there for a while. So they have to start making their sound financial decisions. Cue the awkward conversation where you got to tell the whole world what you make. Turns out they both make about the same amount of money in the 60 to 70K range. So looks like they're both on equal footing, both bringing home the bacon. Nice. I did sense a little one-upsmanship, if that's a word, or insecurity perhaps, when Ryan kept on adding that, oh, he also does carpentry and oh, he also does rentals on the side. Okay, we got it. You can make more money than her sometimes. You're a big manly man, Mr. Buckley. Ding dong. House number one has 3 beds, 1.5 baths, is $100 over the budget, and also has the scariest motherfucking bathroom I've ever seen. I mean, that apartment gave off a weird energy. Between walking straight into a bedroom and then that toilet closet, I feel like some 1900s immigrant factory workers cried over porridge and polio in there, except they don't move west like in Far and Away. They just all die from the plague and haunt the building now. Or will it be house number two? It's fully furnished and possibly in the same building as John and Molly. I don't know. Any Bostonians out there want to weigh in on this one? They looked awfully familiar. So once again, of course, it's house number two. All they have to do is move in and start fresh. So after a few weeks of teasing this scene, we finally get it. Jackie's in her basement going through boxes. I don't quite know why she's going through them, though, because it's not as if they're moving out for good into these places. They're all temporary corporate housing, let's be real. Certainly, the producer is coaching her. Jackie is convinced to just go through all her old memory boxes of her ex who passed away. So she sees stuff from their first Christmas together and boxes of his stuff. I have to say, it was pretty interesting to hear her say that she just feels like she's got a totally different life now, 1.5 years later, that she wore different clothes, she lived in the suburbs. I hear what she's saying. You know, it seems like a lifetime ago. She's changed. Her life has changed. Like anyone who's experienced any kind of a loss, whether it be your family, a friend, a boyfriend, a spouse, it's going to be picking that wound and it's going to hurt, but it doesn't mean that like she's still in the midst of that grieving. You know what I mean? Now, of course, Ryan has to show up and say all the right things to his Mrs. Buckley. I'm here for you. What do you need? I'm not going to let this be a wedge between us because I'm here for the long haul. Oh, so sweet. Yeah, well, not really, because behind her back, he's saying that he's so confused, she's taking steps backward. So here's Jackie thinking, yay, first night in this new place. We both want a fresh start, make new memories. And what does Ryan decide to do? He starts talking and doesn't stop to take a breath. and reiterates everything he's saying in that one-on-one with the camera. 2 weeks enough is not enough for me to understand everything in your past. It's stressing me out. I'm here for a fresh start. Every step is backwards. It looks like you still have feelings and you're going backwards. I don't come with baggage. You said you're over it, but are you over enough to make it work? This could be a turning point. I've never been talking with a girl and she's still not over her past. Ryan, shut up! He just cannot help himself. I mean, now can't we all see why his past relationships ended? He is the type of guy that comes in hot. He is all in. He's thoughtful. He's great. And then he spots a kink or a flaw in his perceived notion on what the relationship is or who this person is. And then he just wigs out. So poor Jackie is just sitting there taking on this verbal barrage of telling her what she's feeling. Okay, here's my psychology background here. It's all projection of his insecurities. He's assuming she's feeling a certain way instead of just allowing her to get a word in edgewise to express her own thoughts and feelings. I can only hope Ryan sees himself on TV and realizes how badly he needs to reel it in. Okay, I didn't think I would end up liking anyone less than I like John, but here we are. Jeffy just broke into a sprint for the photo finish. He won the gold this week. What an asshole. Immediately, I wanted to pick Shawnice up and swaddle her and burp her like a sweet little baby, because as she cheerfully giggles, adios, ochos rios, Jeffy says, hola, beautiful Jamaica. Seriously, man, you have to disagree with her on everything. She says goodbye, you say hello. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. He is just so intentionally mean to her. So here we are, Jeffy, I'm speaking to you. As a teacher and a mother, I would refuse and be that annoying parent in the principal's office because I would not have my kid in your class. Not only am I barely able to understand you when you speak because you purposely mumble, but you lack empathy, self-control, and the ability to act like an adult. Hell no would I want my kid looking up to you as an example. And I don't want to hear, oh, this is a reality show, it's editing, huh? Because if you lack attention to detail on a fucking vacation, I cannot imagine what you let slide in a classroom. Whew. Okay, I'm going to step off my soapbox now because I got a hell of a lot more to say. Now, just as the others must decide where they have to live, so must Shawnice and Jeffy. Shawnice shows Jeffy her kind of top floor, attic level living space at her family's house. Like myself, she prides herself on being organized, but she has a shitload of clothes and shoes. Of course, it's not going to work living there, so they got to check out Jeffy's place. Now, during this transition between apartments, let's not forget that Jeffy says into the camera, this is not a voiceover, I can see myself falling for her. I'm hopeful we can go the distance. Bullshit. God, he's such a fucking liar. Well, we arrive at Jeffy's place, and the three words that come to mind just seeing the family room and the kitchen is brown, depressing, dirty. Just everything in it, maybe it was the lighting, just had this dark beige brown tinge to it. You can tell it's never been properly cleaned. A true, really cheap college apartment rented by boys, not a man who keeps saying he's a teacher, he has a job. Now, Jeff T does have a certain confidence when he's in his own habitat, if you will. And he owns it too, because he says it's really cool having her over and he doesn't have to clam up around her anymore. Well, you idiot, you don't ever have to clam up around her. That is your choice. God, I can't stand him. So now jolly Jeff D shows us the kitchen, which is messy and gross. And the family room, it just looked like it was abandoned. And then his bedroom, it's disgusting. It looks like he was trying to do a quick improv audition for Hoarders. There's dirty clothes everywhere, clothes and shoes and God only knows what else all over the floor. And that bed, I'm not even kidding you, I'm getting a gag reflex thinking about it. Those sheets looked like, oh God, it looks like they had never been washed. You can just tell that, oh God, they've been just sweated in and thinned out and oily, disgusting. Now, there are only two likely reasons in my mind for his room to look like this. Number one, he is truly a dirty, grimy, smelly, lazy slob of a person who doesn't care about anyone else's feelings but his own. Or two, he left it like that so it would scare Shaunice off and she would refuse to sleep there. And then he could just blame it all on her that she didn't want to live there in his filth and it would all be her fault. Well, unfortunately, they have to make a decision. Shaunice is not going to be happy staying there long term. So she asks him what his finances are so they can look at a new place. You cannot blame the girl. The most that she can do is $1,000 a month. They don't tell us per year what these two make. I'm not sure why, but that's all we got. She is also saving to open her own salon, so she's pretty good at budgeting and keeping track of her bills. So, Jeff D, what about you?
It's just overwhelming because I've never taught finances with a girl ever in my life.
Okay, and like, it's the same for everyone on the motherfucking planet. Teach, get over it. Now, all Jeff D can mumble out is that he just makes sure that he pays his big bills, but that's it. So, guess what? Now, Shaunice has to step in and be the mommy who now has to take care of all the finances because Jeff D doesn't want to do it. He also doesn't want to sleep in his own stinky sheets because he decides that he's going to Boy Scouted out on the floor. Shaunice, the freaking fighter that she is, tries to playfully give him a peck and say goodnight. And Jeff D says, leave me alone. I mean, I know I've said this all before, but this truly, that moment would have been the straw that broke the camel's back for me. At that moment, I would have said, oh, what was that? Leave me alone. You know what? No problem. Bye-bye, motherfucker. But instead, she's got to go back to his nasty-ass room and sleep on that bed. I guarantee you, besides those sheets being basically flammable at this point, he doesn't have a mattress pad cover on the mattress. And I literally, for my health, I can't even think about what's going on underneath those pillowcases. Ugh. I mean, that floor probably would have been a better choice for her at that point. Ugh, I'm not kidding. I wouldn't have even sat on that bed, touched the blanket. I don't even touch light switches at certain homes or places. And Jeff D's dumpster there would fall into that category. Ding dong. House number one, $3,000 a month, two bedrooms, and includes all utilities. Or house number two, that's further out, but under budget. I mean, even the agent tried to get in with some screen time on this one. Did I hear and I love it? Yeah, yes, you did try hard. Okay, house number two it is. Well, now it's time to pack up. They're packing boxes in Jeffy's room, and Shaunice is still just trying to be nice, playful, have a good time. And she goes to, like, nudge him or just, like, tickle him, and he practically recoils and melts like the Wicked Witch when Dorothy throws water on her. Oh, my God, that's my second Wizard of Oz reference. Oh, my God, I haven't even, like, seen it or anything, but I'm going to need to go listen to the Wicked soundtrack or something. But anyway, so he pulls back and starts saying, "No, no, 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 no. Come on, just go." He claims he does that because Shaunice just always wants to get super affectionate. Okay, dude, she's nudging you playfully. Super affectionate would be her lap dancing you at your wedding, okay? That was too much. Or that she's just jumping on you and straddling you. He is the worst, in case you haven't caught on to that yet. All right, finally, Shaunice has had enough, and she's got to talk with her mom. She just unloads all her pent-up feelings. She's feeling unwanted, and Jeffy just keeps saying that he doesn't want to be rushed or forced, which means she's the only one continually trying through this process, and she's doing what she's supposed to do, but she's all alone, and he isn't taking any part of it. Now, I have to be honest that I did not like Shaunice's mom's reaction, because she just tells Shaunice that, you know what, you just got to be more open. Well, you know what? Shaunice has been more open with him, more patient with him than any other person probably that I've ever seen on this show in any seasons. So this is just about when Shaunice just really loses it, because she starts listing all the shitty stuff Jeffy has done, and that he even sleeps on the floor in the other room. They've always slept in separate rooms. And that's when we get that head snap side eye from her mom. What a total mind fuck for Shaunice. She's confident and she knows she's a good person, but Jeffy's attitude and ambivalence to her is just messing with her mind and emotions. And it's just wrong. It is. So Shaunice just wants to stop this whole thing and quit. But her mom tells her to stop crying. Again, I didn't like that. I feel like Shaunice's mom should have just let her have her moment, cry, be there for her, tell her that she's there for her no matter what her choice is. And if she wants to get out, get out. But then again, I'm sure she would never have thought that Jeffy is being as big of a jerk as he's being. Fast forward to the first night at the new house. It should be a fun and happy night, but it's not. The floodgates open and Shaunice lets it all out. She's standing there crying by herself, and all Jeffy can say is, "Don't cry, don't cry." I mean, he doesn't say, "Hey, you know, come here, come sit, what's up, what is it?" Because even he knows that it's him, but he doesn't give a shit. In a very sad but calm tone, I gotta give it to her again, Shaunice calmly explains, "I had a hard time today. You closed me out. I'm tired of feeling not wanted. It's the worst feeling in the world. We're in this together. It's not just me. We're both married. Where do we go from here?" Crickets. He just stares at her with those big, beady eyes. Now, there are some rumors floating around that Jeffy and, how do I want to say this, the timing of him being single or not while he was on Married at First Sight is questionable. I'm guessing that's why we see some heated previews of the couples discussing looking at one another's phones and the possibility of having some side pieces. Unfortunately, like I said, we'll be waiting 2 weeks for the next episode. But that doesn't mean that we have to stop our conversation about it. Hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at RealityTVPod. And for bonus episodes and videos, go to patreon.com/RealityTVPod. This week, I searched for eligible prisoners and polygamous families, And then I was able to find some follow-ups on the crimes that those prison bachelors committed. It's actually some pretty scary shit. And I have to tell you about a podcast that, this is not an ad, a plug, I have no relation to this person at all, but someone had recommended that I listen to Done Disappeared. It is absolutely hysterical. This guy is doing a spoof on Sword and Scale and what is it, like Disappear, the Tara Grinstead, whatever that one is. It is so funny. You have got to download it and listen. Each line is just funnier than the last. It's hysterical. Done, Disappeared. All right. Well, those of you in these freezing cold climates like it is here in Chicago, stay bundled up out there. Those of you in the warm and sunny places, adopt us all, please. All right. See you guys. Talk to you soon. Stay salty.